Would you like to connect with experienced finance and accounting professionals for mentorship and career advice? Do you want to hear how the leaders in your profession got where they are now? Are you looking for a networking space, especially for the finance and accounting community? Then FEI Engage is the place for you. FEI Engage is the only community and content hub focused strictly on finance and accounting. It gives you access to the wisdom and experience of long-tenured professionals so you can make savvy decisions about your future. Visit www.financialexecutives.org/FEI-engage or click on the link in this episode's show notes to learn more.
Hi, this is Olivia Berkman, and welcome to FEI Weekly. This week, we're sharing a recording from our recent event, Icons, Women of Note 2024. You'll hear Caroline Sullivan, the interim CFO at Moody's, share her story of how networking has continuously taken her career to the next level.
It's a pleasure to be here today. Big thank you to FEI for the invite of getting to participate in this. I also attended the first ever Icons Women's of Note conference in person in New York City. But today we're actually joined virtually by over 100 participants in over four countries and in 28 states across the United States. So it's nice that we've been able to broaden the remit and allow many more people to attend. So I thought today I would bring you down memory lane a little bit and share candidly with you some of the events that have been instrumental in my career and how I overcame obstacles and paved the way for the success that I have had in my career to date. And we were just saying before the call started that it really has been lots of fun documenting my story. And I think I'm going to pass it on to my kids afterwards so they can understand a little bit more of what I've done to date in my career. I think you will all hear my accent. I was actually born in Dublin, Ireland, and I am the second oldest of five children and the first in my family to go to college. Neither of my parents had the opportunity to attend college. At the end of my secondary school education, similar to high school here in the US, I was considering a few different options of what to do with myself. And all of my decisions were based on the people that were in my life and what they were doing with their careers. And I was deciding between being an accountant and actually being a teacher. Back then, becoming an accountant in Ireland was like an apprenticeship. You worked in an accountant's office and you attended classes at nighttime and you took exams. And I actually really wanted to go to college. So I decided on the route of what we called primary school teaching, equivalent to early elementary education here in the US. This was in the late 1980s, and the late 1980s and the early 1990s was actually a real period of economic challenge in Ireland. The country was experiencing very high unemployment rates. And when I graduated in 1989, the annual average unemployment rate in Ireland was about 15%. And we were actually told, I remember this, that it would be the year 2000, 11 years after we graduated, before we would get full-time jobs in teaching in Ireland. So today, unemployment in Ireland is like only around 4.5%, and it's actually a lot lower than the EU average of 6.5%. But you can imagine in the late 1980s, because of such high unemployment rates, this was also a significant time of emigration from Ireland. And during the 1980s, Ireland's population at that time was about 3.5 million people. But it's estimated that over 450,000 people left Ireland, and it reached a peak in the late 80s. And I was one of those people. I graduated in May of 1989. And about 3 weeks later, I'll always remember the date, June 10th, 1989. I told my parents that I was going to go to the US for 2 years. And this year I will celebrate my 35th anniversary in America. I was very lucky that my sister and my brother-in-law had arrived in New Jersey ahead of me. And my brother-in-law had already attended Seton Hall University in South Orange, New Jersey. And he helped me achieve a graduate student scholarship. And that meant I worked for the university 30 hours a week and they paid for my MBA. And I decided to concentrate in accounting. After I graduated from Seton Hall University, I figured that nobody in Ireland would really know who Seton Hall was, even though actually in the late 1980s, it was a very significant time in Seton Hall University's basketball program. In the 1988-89 season, they achieved a remarkable run in the NCAA tournaments, which is about to start, I think, this week. The Big East just wrapped up last week. The coach's name at the time was PJ Carlissimo. And Seton Hall reached the NCAA tournament for the first time in the school history, and they made it all the way to the championship game. Unfortunately, they lost that game to the University of Michigan in overtime. But the success of that season was a big turning point for Seton Hall basketball, marking the start of a period of competitiveness in both the Big East conferences and actually regular appearances in the NCAA tournaments. However, in Ireland, they didn't know about the Big East or the NCAA tournaments. So I decided that I was actually going to apply for a job in one of the now Big Four accounting firms. In 1989, they were called the Big Six accounting firms, and they were the largest firms in the United States. I'm going to call out the names because you mightn't remember all of them. Arthur Andersen, Coopers & Lybrand, Deloitte & Touche, Ernst & Young, KPMG, and Price Waterhouse. And I decided that they were names that were recognized in Ireland. They all had operations in Ireland. And I decided to join EY, and I was going to do that for a couple of years before I headed back. So I joined their audit practice in the summer of 1992, and I worked out of that New Jersey practice for the next 4 years. In 1996, I was getting married, and I tried to actually transfer to the EY New York office, and I was unsuccessful. So I left, and I started the beginning of my career in financial services. But back in 1996, I kind of stayed very close to my comfort zone, and I joined the offices of an Irish bank. The company was called Allied Irish Banks, and they had about 300 people working out of one building, a couple of floors on 405 Park Avenue in New York. And I joined there in their accounting team. And I actually worked there for 8 years. And it was a very important part of my professional life because during that time of my career, I actually had 3 children. Peter is now 23 and he's living and working in New York City after graduating with a finance degree and 2 national championship football titles from the University of Georgia. Michael is 22 and he is graduating now in a couple of weeks in May with a degree from USC's film school in LA, and he wants to be a screenwriter. So if anybody on this call has any contacts in that industry, I'd love to connect with you afterwards because my contact base is very much in the financial services industry. And my daughter, Anna, is a sophomore at The Ohio State University, and she is studying communications and a minor in musical theater. So no, not one accountant in that group of 3 kids, unfortunately. But back to my story at Allied Irish Banks, and I really enjoyed my time there. But then the worst thing and the best thing happened to me. My job was actually eliminated in 2004. It was actually moved back to Ireland, and they offered me a job back in Ireland, but I didn't want to go. And I say it was the worst thing that ever happened to me in my career because I had not kept in touch with anybody in my network. And I had to reach out to people that I hadn't spoken to at EY since I left there in 1996. Remember, LinkedIn wasn't officially launched to the public until May of 2003. So you really were depending on those private networks that you had in order to stay connected with people. But I also say it was the best thing that ever happened to me career-wise for two reasons. Number one, I vowed that I would never let my network go stale again. And number two, I left this small company of 300 people and I joined Morgan Stanley that had 30,000 people at the time. And I really felt that my career opportunities expanded and started to grow based on that move. I remember starting in that job and I had three young kids and I was wondering how I was going to figure this place out. And I vowed that I would get to know people. And funny enough, I was a little bit of an introvert back then. So I pushed myself and I gave myself a challenge that whenever there was a finance social event, that I would, number one, I would attend the event. And number two, I would force myself to meet someone that I had never met before. So I did it the first time. And after that, I felt, wow, that was actually fun. And then the next finance social event came up and I spoke to the person that I met at the previous event. And again, I forced myself to meet a new person. And before I knew it, I was very well connected in the Morgan Stanley finance function and things started to happen for me. And this began my journey with networking. And it has really played a pivotal role in my career and in my learning journey ever since. And I thought today I would share my story so that you can see the influence is that it has had. After 18 months in my first job at Morgan Stanley, people in finance were starting to get to know who Caroline Sullivan was. And I was actually asked to join a new team that was being created to work on the accounting for complex transactions. So I'll remind you that this was back in 2006, before the global financial crisis. And I want to diverge a little bit here from the topic of network and focus on something else of importance, and that is the annual employee performance life cycle in companies and why you have to spend time doing the required steps. And if there's nothing else that you take away from this talk today, take the time to complete all the stages in the annual life cycle of performance reviews at your companies. Document what you have done and ask your bosses for information on your potential career progression. So in the summer of 2007, I am filling out this mid-year assessment and I asked what I thought was a very simple question. This particular summer, I was an executive director at Morgan Stanley, and I was focused on what did I need to do over the next couple of years to become a managing director? And in particular, I asked, did I need international experience to become an MD? And I wrote that in the form. My boss came back to me a few weeks later and she said, what did you mean by that question, Caroline? And I said, I just want a business trip to London or to Hong Kong. And then they came back a few weeks later and they said, would I ever consider moving to Hong Kong? That they were in the process of creating a new team over there and they needed somebody to head it up. So on August 1st, 2008, myself and my family, my kids were now 7, 6 and 4, we packed our bags and we moved to Hong Kong. And mind you, this was in the middle of the financial crisis. And I thought I would just bring you back with some facts on what that was all about, in case there are people in this audience that don't remember that time. But it was a real pivotal time in my career. The crisis actually began in kind of mid-2007 and it peaked in 2008. And it was officially over in the middle of 2009, but it had long lingering effects for many years after that. It reached its peak in the fall of 2008 when several key events occurred, including the bankruptcy of Lehman Brothers, which happened on September 15th, 2008. Remember, I arrived in Hong Kong on August 1st, 2008. And this bankruptcy of Lehman Brothers, that caused a severe shock in the global financial systems. And following this, there were a series of other bank failures and bailouts, and governments worldwide had to intervene at unprecedented scale to rescue failing financial institutions and stimulate their economies. So moving to Hong Kong was an experience in my career that was pivotal professionally and personally. My children all learned Mandarin. We traveled around the region. I always say they got to understand that the world was a bigger place than America by the traveling that we did at that stage in their lives. And professionally, I was actually protected a little bit by being in Hong Kong from all the layoffs that were happening in other major Morgan Stanley locations around the world. Morgan Stanley's stock at the beginning of 2007 was like around $47. And in 2008, it reached a low of $6.76. And employees were spending their time watching that stock price drop and the value of all their stock ownerships drop significantly. The job that I went to Hong Kong to, remember, it was around the accounting for complex transactions. Well, overnight, there were no complex transactions anymore, and I had to pivot, and I became the Asia legal entity controller. And I learned a lot about working for an American company in Asia, and I'll tell you two things. It's hard, and the hours are long. You do your day job during the day, you go home, you get something to eat, and then you get back on the phone at nighttime to connect with all your colleagues in the US. And this was also the first time that I saw the power of an external network. My colleagues at Morgan Stanley introduced me to the person who was doing the same job as me at Goldman Sachs. Her name is Karen Hughes, and she's a dear, dear friend of mine to this day. And together we established a group of people who met regularly to talk about issues and all of the new accounting guidance that was coming out at that time on fair value accounting and mark-to-market accounting, and lots of increased disclosures that companies were now being required to include in their financial statements. So it was great to learn from other companies as to how they were operating and implementing all of these new requirements. After 2 years, the Sullivans decided to come home back to New Jersey and New York. And I came back to a job in Morgan Stanley that was okay. It was definitely not my dream job. But I continued to have conversations with my manager. And in the summer of 2011, I met with Peggy during my mid-year review, and she asked me what I would like to do. And I had been spending a lot of time thinking about this, and I wanted to actually be the controller for Morgan Stanley's broker-dealer. It was the biggest financial legal entity that the company had. But, and there is a big but, there was somebody in that role, and that person wasn't going anywhere. But I kid you not, about 2 weeks later, I got a call from a search firm. And they asked me, would I be interested in being the controller for the Bank of America Merrill Lynch broker dealer? And that was actually the largest broker dealer in the world. And this is where my network kicked in. I actually didn't know many people at Bank of America, but I did know the Bank of America CFO for the Asia region because he lived in the same building as me in Hong Kong. So I called him and I got some insights from him. And I actually decided to make the move. And I hadn't yet made managing director at Morgan Stanley, but I had to take a risk and just trust that there would be a path to managing director at Bank of America. So I left a company of 30,000 people and I joined Bank of America that at the time had 300,000 employees. So I really needed to figure out how the company operated and how the leaders of the finance organization operated. And believe it or not, within 18 months, the CFO of Asia that I just mentioned, he moved back to New York with his family and he became my boss. His name is Tony Benares, and he has been a long-term mentor of mine. In 2014, after a few years at B of A, the finance organization hired a new chief accounting officer, and his name is Rudy Bless, and he's very well known to everybody in FEI. And he came in with the goal to reorganize and create a new chief accounting officer controllership function This was a major project for the finance organization because you were moving teams of people who reported up to lines of businesses, CFOs, to creating one controllership organization that would support all of the business. Unfortunately, I didn't make the cut to move into Rudy's team, and I was very upset about that because I really felt that that's where my skill set laid rather than on the CFO side of the house. But once again, a disappointment turned into a great opportunity for me, and I was asked to work on understanding emerging technologies and how they could be used in the finance team to make the team more efficient. While I was working closer to Rudy, I noticed that he never missed an FEI CCR meeting. And CCR stands for the Committee of Corporate Reporting. And it's a technical committee of FEI made up of approximately 50 chief accounting officers and corporate controllers from like big Fortune 100 companies. So I did some investigation of myself and I realized that FEI had a committee on finance and information technology, CFIT. And that actually provides advice to financial executives on how to use emerging technologies in order to operate, accounting and finance functions and improve their performance. So I applied to that and I was successful. And another great example of an external networking group. We met quarterly at different company locations throughout the US and to understand how people were using technology to do the role of accounting in a different way. We were looking at technologies like Alteryx and RPA and process mining back then. But one of the things that we did is we shared our successes and our failures. And I felt I could pick up the phone and call any of these people at any time to get more details so that I didn't have to try and reinvent the wheel in the work that I was doing. So the job that I was disappointed about getting turned out to be the best 18 months learning experience of my career. And everything that I learned from an emerging technology basis has really stuck with me throughout the rest of my career. But guess what? I did get a call from Rudy's and his chief accounting officer leadership team in short order. And I became the controller for all of Bank of America's banking business. It was a great job. And I really got to learn how to be a chief accounting officer from one of the best. But I really needed to be in Charlotte, North Carolina. And I had like a pass from Rudy to stay in New York until my baby went to college. And then I really had to move down there. So as my daughter Anna got older, I started to put my feelers out as I wanted to stay in the Northeast. That's where all my family is. And I really wanted to stay around the New York, New Jersey area. And I also knew that now I wanted to be a chief accounting officer of a public company. I actually wanted to be in charge. So the Moody's job opened up in 2018. They actually hired a new CFO in August of that year. And then I was hired in December of 2018. Both of us were for first time in our role of CFO and CAO in those positions with public companies. And what I would tell you is the networking story continues. I had gone from working from a chief accounting officer to now being the chief accounting officer. And I believe that it was now one of my jobs was to know what does good really look like in controllership functions in companies. So I reached out once again to my network and I got nominated for Deloitte Center for Controllership, a round table of controllers from various different international companies. And we, again, at that time, we met once a quarter and once a year we went to Deloitte University. And I remember going in March of 2019, soon after I joined Moody's, and leaving there feeling very overwhelmed that we were not focused on the things that people were talking about in that organization. And then I'll bring you like 4 years later, I left the meeting last March of 2023 feeling that my team was now leading the pack as it came to what the things that we were doing as an organization to forward how we were utilizing technology, how we were organized around the globe to actually support the finance organization within Moody's. I was also very lucky in Moody's that the chair of our audit committee was Leslie Seidman. She was the past chair of the FASB, and she actually recommended that I get involved in some other boards so that it would help my understanding on how the board worked at Moody's. And back in 2020, she nominated me for the FEI board. And here I got to meet other great finance leaders and chief accounting officers. I started off as a director. I moved on to chair the audit committee, and I'm really excited in a couple of months to take over actually the chair of the board. It has been a wonderful experience. And I've also volunteered there for the Financial Accounting and Reporting Roundtable. And Moody's participates in that with other finance leaders from other companies that are usually smaller than the companies that are in CCR. But we still benefit from talking to peers about US GAAP, financial reporting, SEC regulations, internal controls over financial reporting, and a variety of other operational and other financial matters. So remember I said networking has played a pivotal role in my career and my learning journey. I actually believe networking is part of my job description. When I joined Moody's, I felt the finance function was very myopic and inward looking, and I saw little involvement in networks, and they didn't really have conversation with peers at other companies or consulting firms to understand what good looks like. That has really changed today. And members of the Moody's finance team also now believe in the power of networking because they have seen the positive results from that. So for networking to be positive, you have to be willing to give in order to get. You have to be willing to share information. My motto in my work life is not to reinvent the wheel. Every issue that we have as a company, some other organization has probably encountered it already. So why not ask how did they solve the issue and see would that apply to your company? Through all my networking, I've met many, many great people who have become friends of mine over the years. And I hope today, after hearing my story, you will take some steps to work on your network so that both you and your company can benefit from the conversations. Thank you.